Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
What we're talking about when we are talking about farming, and you can show them the techniques, you can how can I say that? You can show them that it's increasingly manual.
It's very intense when it comes to hand.
And that's it makes people respect the product a little more.
The labor intensive and
seeing that it is not a drink.
Yeah,
it is a fantastic wine, a fantastic aperitif wine, a party wine, call it whatever you want, but it is not a drink, you know.
Okay.
It is something more, and I think it's the really it's really crucial to understand the region is have a walk through the vineyard. That's the first thing, and then we talk to them about also what makes champagne, which is time.
Can't get around that one.
A very special relationship to time.
Yeah.
Of course, we're not making spirits, or we're not making port wine or sherry. They have a different relationship to time as well, or in Cognac, or in Armagnac, or in Calvados. But by showing people what a champagne tastes like in its very, very early stages of aging, and then after 2-3 years, 4-7, then they get it as well. You don't need to tell them what makes champagne. They get that time plays an incredible role, and patience, and this is part of our this is our commitment, committing to take the time so that the people who visit us and the people who buy our wines have the best possible experience.
You know, it's so enlightening to hear you talk about how it's not just a drink. So setting aside the consumptive part of it, and I saw that unfold yesterday at your seminar. You know, when people first were poured the wines, there was, you know, a little restrained atmosphere. But as they started tasting your offerings, particularly the library ones, the atmosphere in the room completely changed. And people were so engaged and involved. And that's perhaps that piece that you're describing, that aside from the pleasure of actually consuming a well-made wine, there's that other piece that people experience that you can't necessarily put into words, and you're more than welcome to try. I've never been able to really nail it down, but it's very special.
I think the fact that it is a difficult feat to describe wine and the feelings you get when you drink is part of why people drink wine. If you understand something completely, if you get it, if it's obvious or if it's too obvious, it will in time bore you. And part of the reason people drink wine, apart from the social interaction that it sparkles, I think has to do with the mystery. And I think also this is how people choose their favorite wine regions. People tend to be attracted by things they don't understand completely. There's this core of curiosity in us that needs to be fed and nurtured. So when you drink very fruity, sweet, one-dimensional sparkling, it's pleasurable, but it doesn't create the interaction, the debate, the link between people. That's something a little bit more rich, a little bit more head-scratching, a little bit more mysterious will create.
You know, that is, again, something I just want to highlight and pause for a moment, because I truly feel this is a teachable moment. for our listeners to kind of ponder. In my business, in the business of journalism, we clearly strive to define, to attach descriptors, to attach scores, to basically build as much framework around the product as, you know, we see fit. Consumers, on the other hand, frequently, and I'm sure they say that to you as well, say, I don't have the right language. I'm intimidated because I don't know, you know, what to say about it. I like the wine, but I don't know how to describe it. But what you said is that that's not important. You know, it's not important to actually attach the exact verbiage. It's the emotion, it's the connection, it's the intellectual stimulation. Yeah. That's what's seminal.
Something that we hear a lot at the winery are sentences along those lines, like, this is the wine I like.
Yeah.
When people have tasted 5, 6, 7 wines. I can't tell you why, but I like this one. They can't tell you why. But this is also the wine they're going to buy.
Yeah.
They cannot tell you why they will buy this one, but this is the wine they will buy and enjoy. So I think that you have to make peace with the fact that you cannot describe everything. You can put descriptors, like you said, say, okay, we have hands off. Fresh apple, golden apple, apricots, ripe lemon, green lemon. It gives you an idea. It helps you build a wine in your mind, and when you will taste it, actually your feeling may be quite different.
Yeah.
Also because the way we smell and the way we taste is pretty unique to each person. But it's needed because it makes people curious about it. Well-written tasting notes.
Yeah.
Sparkles interest.
Yeah.
We're in an ecosystem. We need each other.
Yeah.
Without trying, there's no wine to write about and.
Absolutely, and
most good producer I know may not be the best people to talk about their own wines.
Yeah,
you know. So,
but it's so important because you know I'm a consumer first and foremost, and you know I really strive for my listeners to connect to themselves and to feel empowered, and when they see a bottle of champagne on the shelf, to you know not be intimidated by the fact that it's something important they have to sit up straight. It's really something that's a relational aspect. Mm-hmm. And what we talked about could have easily been applied to a human relationship. I mean, we don't fall in love because there's a litany of good qualities. The person could be very attractive and very smart, but you're not feeling that chemical connection. And what you describe with respect to wine is very similar. You connect to it. Obviously, it has to be well made. Obviously, it has to be delicious or, you know, game over. But it's that other undefinable piece that makes you truly get into it and truly get turned on. And that is so individual. And I just want to encourage people to look for that. If wine does that for them, it's worth following in, you know, in every aspect. And if a winery delivers that, don't you think that that's the ultimate in a way?
I think there's a champagne out there for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
If you are intimidated by champagne for whatever reason, history, price, all that, you can think that it's not for you. It is. There is something out there for you. There is something out there that will make your life as a wine enthusiast better.
Yeah.
So you should keep discovering.
Yes.
And you know. Don't invest in things because everybody tells you they're good. If you try it and you don't like it, then don't buy it. You know, just wait until you stumble upon the house, the producer that makes the wine you like.
Yeah. Mm. So we'll talk about marketing a bit more because you're here at Pebble Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And you're clearly an ambassador, not just for your brand, but clearly we talked about Champagne Region. are these events really helpful to you as a producer, and do you feel it helpful to the consumer to get them to the table, to get them to taste all these things? This is a Disneyland for a wine lover.
Yes, they are useful. They're useful for us business-wise. That's that's a good thing. But they're also useful because we get to talk to the person who drinks the wine, which is not, despite what you might think, doesn't happen every day. Yeah. Unless you have an open winery with a cellar door and you spend time there as a producer, you're not talking to the consumer every day. You're talking to middlemen.
Yeah.
You're talking to your importers, distributors, and of course, at the core of your relationship with those people, the quality of your wines have to be, how can I say that, vouched for by them.
Yeah.
So, but
sure.
then down the road, you kind of stop talking about it, and you start talking about extremely trivial business decisions that you're going to make, which is also interesting. I'm not saying this is boring, but sometimes a fresh eye on your product is fantastic.
So you like consumer feedback, this
I love
one
it.
One.
I love
great.
It.
So let's go back to your winery for a moment, talk about your products. Because that's what you're presenting, and I had a pretty powerful preview. How many wines do you make?
It's an ever-evolving thing. We have a core of seven wines that are here most of the time and available at more or less every moment. We have a classic vintage, we have a single vineyard vintage, we have Grand Cru blends, non-Grand Cru blends, all of this. But then there are the little things that we fall in love with during harvests or during vinification and say, oh, this is so good. This is so good on its own. It needs to be bottled on its own. And and there needs to be a small part of this wine that is on the market. So there's that as well. So depending on the time of year or the year, maybe from 7 to 10 wines.
Okay. And you have library. As I discovered, but mostly it's not necessarily available to the consumer, right? It's not a commercial part of it, just something you hold back at the winery?
We have a library, but the library has three main, how can I say that, purposes.
Yeah.
First of all, research.
Yes.
Dig in into the winery history to understand the style. We have colleagues, when they arrive at the winery, they need to understand why they're working the way they're working. They need to project something when they're working. So this is very crucial that they are educated to the winery. So this is one of the purposes. The second purpose, of course, is marketing.
As you
witnessed yesterday when you came to our panel. It is fantastic to show, for example, as we did in a vertical yesterday, how the wines taste after 10, 15, 20, 25 years.
Yes.
Because if they taste the way they do today, it is because we have this in mind for the future. So to understand what we're doing today, you have to peek, you have to have a peek at the past so that you can get into the brand and say, okay, I'm going to buy vintage because apart from just drinking champagne, having a collection of nice vintages is something beautiful.
Yeah.
We don't sell it for many, many reasons that are extremely well known to wine enthusiasts, like bottle variations, things like that. Also, the price would be a little bit steep, in my opinion. But the fact is that our work has to stop one day. The wines have to leave us at some point. You know, you don't have children so that they will live with you at home all their life. You're making wine to send it out in the world. So we're not selling our library because we need it, and we're not selling it also because it is part of what makes wine beautiful. If you want to enjoy it old, you have to buy it young.
So there you go. So buy it and lay it down yourself.
Exactly.
On the practical side, are your wines imported throughout the United States? Can people find
them? We have an importation in DC at the moment
that
we've been working with since almost a decade now. We had no importation so far in the US because we had no wine to sell.
Okay.
Europe and Asia absorbed all our production, so we had to increase our production slowly for many years to have some bottles free for prospection. So this year it happens that we have some wine now, a couple of thousand cases that that we are looking forward to sell in the US. We're talking with people at the moment. I'll let you know. But for the moment, we're still very difficult to find in the US.
Okay.
It will change.
Well, hopefully I'm keeping my fingers and toes crossed because from what I tasted yesterday, I want to experience it again and again.
This is so nice.
It's really a very special effort, and it shows me just how much heart and soul went into it when I taste your wines, and it's very consistent with what you've shared with me this morning, because I can see the intent, I can see the art, as well as, you know, the integrity that went into those wines. Talking about the future for your brand and for yourself perhaps, what are you looking forward to? What does it look like to you right now?
I think I'm looking to make things a little better every day, you know?
Yeah.
A little better work in the vineyard, a little better work in the cellar, a little better decoration for the tasting room. No brutal change in the way we make wine is planned. But there's this idea that if you want to achieve something truly cult, and maybe we'll be there somewhere, sometime, you have to make, you have to improve yourself all the time. Read, educate yourself, think about your own work. Don't suffer because of your work. Don't view your work and your position as a how can I say that, as a curse, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Be joyful, educate yourself, make things a little better every day. Things like that. This is my life today, and this is my plan for the future.
I'm gonna ask you kind of a fun question. Obviously, this is your life. This is your world. This is where you spend the majority of your time. But if you weren't in the wine making business, what would you do?
This is a good question. I struggle to operate outside the wine and food world because I am so passionate about both wine and food that I struggle to imagine myself outside this world. But maybe mechanic or metal work.
Okay.
You know? Something.
Something with your hands.
Yeah. I like cars. I've always liked cars. Working in a garage, maybe.
That's restoring. So cool.
Restoring. I don't know. No. Or working with. In education, who knows? It's really a question I don't really ask myself because.
No, I mean, I think it's an answer in and out of itself, that you're so attached and so engaged and involved in the world that you're in that you can't imagine anything else. A good thing. So last but not least, I have a personal question for you. I was thinking during the seminar, you mentioned food, so I have to go there. I actually really enjoy pairing pretty heavy proteins with sparkling wines. I know the conventional wisdom would say, and most of our listeners probably heard it a million times, red meat, you know, red wine. I find that to be not true at all in my personal experience. In fact, I wrote an article about it. That's how strongly I felt about it. What is your take on it?
Champagne is a very diverse thing. There is not one champagne. So pairing champagne has to take into account what champagne we're talking about. I like harmonies that don't make you, that don't saturate your palate. So the freshness and the acidity of champagne are fantastic, for example, with cheese. Mimolette, Comté, Parmesan, it works so well. Mm-hmm. It's a protein shoot. Yeah. and the acidity of, and the freshness, and also the sometimes the in the more mature champagne, those torrefaction aromas, they go wonderfully with cheeses. It's something you can do. There are a few things that I really, really love with champagne. That are not gastronomy, but that are very cult dishes, like wonton noodle soup. You're from San Francisco, or are you from the Bay Area?
Yeah.
Have fantastic Asian cuisine in the in the area.
Wonton
I hear
soup.
And have a champagne rosé with a wonton noodle soup. You. Shrimp wonton.
Sure. Better. Okay. Yeah, we have wonton. To be very specific.
Although pork wonton works as well. The shrimp is better. It's a matter of taste. It is fantastic. It is fantastic. Those salty, savory, the rice noodle.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, with champagne, incredible, incredible.
There you have it, Chinese.
Chinese. Something that works extremely well, caramelized ribs. Ribs.
Caramelized. Yeah, I know. That's
like exactly vintage
like
champagne and ribs.
Short rib
Come
and
on.
Champagne, yeah.
You wow. know, it's yeah, we don't eat a lot of wonton noodle soup or ribs in champagne. I can tell you that.
I was
it's
gonna
not,
say
it's not part of our daily diet, and it's very, very un-French. But as we travel to promote our wines, we get to try our wines with more local poorsman dishes sometimes. And this is, you know, fantastic.
That is so awesome. So I think the message here is for people to experiment.
Yes.
Buy a bottle of champagne and pair it with something that you would not normally think about and see what happens.
Exactly. Exactly. Sometime you will mess it up. Don't worry.
No, but that's the beauty of it, right? It's like trial and error. That's the whole journey of wine. Well, as I mentioned earlier, we really hope that your wines make it into the U.S. market in short order. We will put a link up how people can possibly contact a local, well, not local in general, but someone that carries, the distributor that carries your product. And I thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
For your thoughts, for your candor, and for your beautiful wines that, unfortunately, I feel very selfish, but I've got a chance to experience. I'm very impressed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure featuring Ilona Thompson. We'll see you again next week.